It's The Unbelievable Truth with your host, David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to The Unbelievable Truth, the panel show about incredible truths and barely credible lies. I'm David Mitchell. Well, the sooner we start, the sooner we finish. Not my words, those of tonight's panellists. Please welcome Tony Hawkes, Zoe Lyons, Mark Steele and Fern Brady. The rules are as follows. Each panellist will present a short lecture that should be entirely false, save for five hidden truths which their opponent should try to identify. Points are scored by truths that go unnoticed, while other panellists can win points if they spot a truth or lose points if they mistake a lie for a truth. First up is Mark Steele. Mark, your subject is table tennis or ping pong, a game played on a large table where two or four players hit a ball over a low net using small bats. Off you go, Mark. Fingers on buzzers, the rest of you.
If a Hong Kong parliamentary election ends in a tie, the candidates draw from a bag of 10 numbered ping pong balls. They then play a best of three match and the winner is elected, which is how Zhi Wei became Member of Parliament until he was sacked for passing on information about his opponent's weak forehand serve to Jeffrey Epstein.
Zoe.
I'm going to go for the first part of that, that if there's a tie in an election in Hong Kong, that they have some sort of lottery system where it's pulled out. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I am going for it. Ping pong balls out of a bag. Chooses the council.
You're absolutely right.
There you go. Yeah.
You lost confidence as you tried to re-explain it.
I did. I was losing my breath there, but I went for it, and I'm glad I did. Good. Yeah.
According to the official Hong Kong Electoral Affairs Commission's guidelines, if political candidates finish in a dead heat, they must draw from an opaque bag of 10 numbered ping pong balls. Whoever pulls out the highest number takes office. Election Affairs Commission Chairman Wu Kwok-hing stated, "Hong Kong people believe in fate. Drawing lots is believing in fate." Yeah. But I imagine the Beijing government just fiddles all the elections there now, so that won't be necessary. If you're going to fiddle an election, no need to make it a draw. Ask Putin.
You think Trump will go for that and then say, if he draws five and the other one draws eight, he'll go, five is the bigger number, it was a cheat.
I've got the bigger ball.
Amongst those who have banned table tennis are the Catholic Church in Ireland, saying it excited the passions of the young. The Soviet Union banned table tennis because it was considered bad for young people's eyesight, causing them to believe that Stalin was less good-looking than Trotsky. And to correct their eyesight, young table tennis players were encouraged to masturbate instead.
I want to go back on one of those two because I believe one of them to be true, David.
OK.
So it's either Russia banned the table tennis or Ireland did. And I'm going to go, this is surprising, but I'm going to go for Ireland.
I'm afraid it's not true, Tony. I'm not going to reflect on whether or not that's surprising. But no. There's no ban of table tennis in Ireland.
And the BBC demanded a table tennis-themed routine due to be performed by Abby Clancy was banned from Strictly Come Dancing because it might draw attention to how the BBC had lost the rights to the World Table Tennis Championships to Sky Sports.
Tony.
They lost the rights to the World Championships to Sky Sports.
No.
I did this programme, David, a few weeks back, and I got nothing right.
How many flaws are there in that? Abby Clancy doing a table tennis-themed dance on Strictly Come Dancing and then banning it, and it being because...
Well, look, I've noticed that...
Mark, you're not helping Tony's confidence. The situation is that there's never been a table tennis-themed routine on Strictly Come Dancing, and the BBC have never held ongoing rights to the World Table Tennis Championship.
Could I just make a little point here?
Yeah.
That to ridicule somebody for trying to guess absolutely ludicrous facts that get through all the time is a little bit below the belt, and I'm so upset.
We all apologise, Tony, and it was actually a very sensible suggestion. And I think a little more seriousness all round from here on. Mark.
To adapt table tennis for television, the balls were made larger and faces of pop stars such as Shaking Stevens and Bananarama were painted on them. Then the game was renamed beach table tennis and players had to wear bikinis.
Fern.
Is the bikini thing true?
For beach table tennis.
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid not.
Oh.
No, there's been no... I mean, it's an idea. Maybe they'll go for that, but no.
I think they're missing a trick there.
Yeah.
Aren't you?
Yeah. I was going to buzz, but then I, you know... Yeah. Yeah.
I feel terrible now. Yeah.
Remember, everyone, none of this matters. That's, you know...
We could do a real rebrand on it, ping pong and a thong. It would just be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That sort of half-hearted clapping as well would be the sound I would make playing ping pong. And for those listening on the radio, that's not the audience applauding, that is simply Zoe Lyons in a thong playing ping pong.
And ping pong in a thong would be the one thing the BBC retained the rights to. Table tennis is one of the most dangerous sports in the world. In America, the game was considered to be especially lethal. US doctors warned of ping pong face, which caused the eyes to be drawn closer to the nose to watch the ball.
Tony.
The eyes do get drawn closer together when you're playing table tennis.
Whether or not they do, it is true about doctors' fears of ping pong face. Well done. US doctors suggested the condition could be even worse than bicycle face, a condition they identified in women when cycling first took off, which they said left sufferers with a jutting chin and bulging eyes.
So, I knew that as well.
Is that from the saddle?
What the... I don't know. I mean, I think it's mainly to try and stop women having any agency. I think that's what that
right.
was from. So, oh, look, women are cycling around. They can travel, you know, without men taking them in a coach. Oh. That's got to be bad.
So they would make that up about women doing any sport at all?
Is that true?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. They weren't. Yeah. Yeah. How has this game already got to the point where you're asking me what's the... Yeah. In my own career as a table tennis player, I've lost to players such as historian Simon Sharma, ex-defence secretary Penny Mordaunt, astronaut Tim Peake, Booker Prize-winning novelist Howard Jacobson, and Virginia Wade.
Tony.
I think I've got another one. He lost to Howard Jacobson.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. He's a keen player, isn't he?
Yeah, he was very... He was a champion.
Yeah. It says here, Mark Steele has played table tennis in local leagues and knockout competitions for many years. He once played in a tournament organised by Simon Kellner at the Independent newspaper, losing in the final to Booker Prize-winning novelist Howard Jacobson. About the match, Mark says, I was stuffed rotten by Howard, who is about 70, but still very sharp.
Though I did win against the Dalai Lama, who was so angry that he said he hoped I was reincarnated as a tapeworm.
Thank you, Mark. And at the end of that round, Mark, you've managed to smuggle two truths past the rest of the panel, which are that the Soviet Union banned table tennis between 1930 and 1950 as it was considered bad for young people's eyesight, though critics have argued that the move was less about health and more about limiting the influence of what was regarded by some as a Western sport. And the second truth is that to adapt table tennis for television, the balls were made larger. This was after the 2000 Olympics in Sydney, and they were increased in size from 38 millimetres to 40 millimetres in diameter to make the sport more spectator-friendly, especially for those watching on television. And that means, Mark, you've scored 2 points. Tony Firkoz holds the record for juggling ping pong balls by catching 7 of them in turn in his open mouth, then spitting them up in the air again. Asked how he felt about setting a record with 7 balls, he said, "There were 8," before passing out. OK, we turn now to Fern Brady. Fern, your subject is butterflies, flying insects that grow from caterpillars, which have small bodies and large, often colourful wings. Off you go, Fern.
Unlike moths, butterflies hear with their bottoms, see with their feet, taste with their wings, and smell like chocolate. Butterflies' bottoms are endlessly fascinating. The common sage butterfly has a false bum on its head, and a European butterfly caterpillar strums its bum like a guitar.
Zoe.
If it doesn't exist, I wish it did, but false bum on head. often in nature, don't you, put a false bomb somewhere to sort of put a predator off and say, no, it's this end.
Do you?
Yeah. You do, yeah.
Oh, don't worry, that's just a bum. You can't eat bum.
Yeah.
You can eat bum.
You can eat bum.
You can eat bum.
You can.
I had a bit of cow bum the other day.
Rump.
It's a good bit to eat.
It's a nice bit
to eat. Somebody think about it.
I'm going for butterfly bum head.
Yes. Well, it's not true. That's not true.
Oh,
no, the common sage butterfly doesn't exist.
When butterfly collecting reached its peak in the mid-Victorian era, butterflies were actually known as flutterbys, and collectors would blast them out of the sky with shotguns. The tattered remains would be proudly mounted on the wall over the fireplace. Butterfly names include the Flasher, Neon Bitch, Flouncy Gordon, Rear Admiral Nelson, Sunny Delight 2.0, Dizzy Rascal, Big Orange Tease, the Common Strumpet, and the Ozempic Pigeon.
Tony.
The Common Strumpet.
No.
Oh.
In 2007, Cystocam, the cystitis relief medicine, which features a butterfly on every packet, was criticised for altering a quote of the great Muhammad Ali for their advertising slogan, "Float like a butterfly, stings when I pee."
Tony.
They had the butterfly on the packets.
They don't. It does not feature a butterfly.
Butterfly milk is the most expensive on earth. To give you an idea just how...
Oh, I'll tell you what, mate, there's no doubt about that one. Butterfly milk. I've seen it. I mean, I was out there living in Singapore for a couple of years. It cost me a fortune. I had to sell my house just for a bloody day's portion of it. Ooh, don't even need to tell me that one, David. That's just mark it down as correct.
No, sadly, there's no such thing as butterfly milk. Only mammals produce milk.
I knew that.
The vast majority of butterflies are bright and multicoloured, which has led disappointed lepidopterists to give the remaining dull-looking brown ones exotic names like Inglorious Mediocris, Collins Wintercoat, The Average Disappointment, and Darwin's Skidmark.
Thank you, Fern. And at the end of that round, Fern, you've managed to smuggle five truths past the rest of the panel, which are that butterflies smell like chocolate. Butterflies such as the owl butterfly and the wall brown butterfly give off a pheromone that's said to smell like chocolate. Some butterfly fragrances are floral, some mimic brown sugar and honey, while some are musky. The second truth is that a European butterfly caterpillar strums its bottom like a guitar when it starts the process of metamorphosis inside its chrysalis to create vibrations that closely mimic the calls of a queen ant. Fooled by the sound, worker ants carry the chrysalis into their nests, feeding it, cleaning it, and protecting it as it transforms into a butterfly. Clever, yet dishonest. Third truth, Victorian butterfly collectors would blast butterflies out of the sky with shotguns. While not the primary method for butterfly collectors, who typically used nets, shooting butterflies with shotguns using fine dust shot was a recognised and practised technique among professional collectors. It was used to collect rare, high-flying or large specimens, such as birdwing butterflies in tropical regions that would have been otherwise unreachable. The fourth truth is the Flasher is the real name of a butterfly in that long list. And the last truth is that Inglorious Mediocris is a real name of a butterfly. Poor butterfly. And that means, Fern, you've scored 5 points. In just 2 weeks, the monarch butterfly caterpillar grows to 2,700 times its birth weight. If a human baby gained weight at the same rate, it would almost certainly be American. In France, pubic lice are known as papillons d'amour, or butterflies of love, in much the same way as genital warts are known as Mother Nature's vajazzle. Next up is Zoe Lyons. Zoe, your subject is fish. cold-blooded aquatic animals, typically with fins, scales and gills. Off you go, Zoe.
Fish fingers were originally sold only in packs of five and were called fish fist supper, while the McDonald's Filet-O-Fish had the O added to appeal to the Irish market and was created for God-fearing Catholics who avoided meat on Fridays.
Fern.
That's true about the Catholics.
About the fish on a Friday.
Yeah.
The fish. You're absolutely right. Yeah. In 1962, a McDonald's franchisee called Lou Grun, who owned 43 McDonald's restaurants in Cincinnati, noticed sales dropped sharply every Friday during Lent. Most of his customers were Roman Catholic and abstained from eating meat on those days. To solve the problem, he persuaded McDonald's to add a fish sandwich to the menu. Today, more than 300 million Filet-O-Fish sandwiches, almost all containing pollock, are sold globally each year, with nearly a quarter of these purchased during Lent. There you go. They contain pollock, and the burgers contain... Zoe.
A lot of fish who live in the sea, quite frankly, find it a bit of a nightmare and wish they'd worked harder to evolve, as they don't like the sensation of being wet. Many suffer from seasickness, while others are prone to agoraphobia. In Iceland, it's traditional when moving into a new home to wave about a week-old cod head on a stick. This is to rid the place of any demons or indeed anything with a sense of smell.
Fern.
I think this is... I'm quite big in Iceland, right? So I've been there a few times. They're mental. They think there's little fairies by the side of the road living in hells. And they eat pickled whale out of a jar, so it seems feasible that they would wave a fish's head around. You
know? Yes, but it's not true. Feasible, but not true.
I just wanted to say I'm big in Iceland.
Yeah, well, yeah.
The supermarket.
How dare you?
The tiny male rabbit Ras will take up residence in the mouth of his much larger female mate, which some think is an attempt to stop her from nagging. While the very unfussy pearlfish...
Yeah, I think that's where it lives.
The male lives in the female's mouth.
Yes.
It's the sort of thing you imagine fish doing.
Yeah, they do all sorts of things like that, don't they?
There's some weird things going on in the sea.
Yeah.
But not that.
Just wondering, David, is there any sort of free counselling we can have after this? I'm doing my head in.
It's the next scandal that'll break after since Strictly. the real hell that is the unbelievable truth.
The very unfussy pearlfish will quietly and happily set up home in a sea cucumber's anus. They say it's a very comfortable arrangement as long as you crack a window. Perhaps it was stories...
Tony.
I'm having the anus.
I told you can eat. Bum. You're absolutely right.
Yeah!
As the sea cucumber breathes through its anus, the small, translucent, eel-like pearlfish has to time its entry into the anus with the sea cucumber's next breath. The sea cucumber provides excellent protection, and one discovered in 1977 was found to have at least 15 pearlfish living in its anus. So.
I bet he just said he fell downstairs and it happened. Perhaps it was stories about these rectal tenants that caused other fish to take precautions against botty squatters. The bumphead parrotfish will actually block its anus up with shells, while the herring simply farts continuously. Up until about 1620, some early explorers still refused to accept certain things weren't, in fact, fish, including succulents, seaweeds, penguins, cormorants, and polar bears. Found only in remote parts of West Papua, the one-eyed monocle fish has evolved with one oversized eye in the middle of its head. And believe me, a mating pair of monocles is quite a spectacle.
Thank you, Zoe. And at the end of that round, Zoe, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel, which are that fish can suffer from seasickness. German zoologist Dr. Reinhold Hilbig sent 49 different fish on a plane that deliberately went into a steep dive to simulate zero gravity conditions. He found that 8 out of the 49 fish exhibited signs of seasickness. According to Dr. Hilbig, they looked as if they were about to vomit. The second truth, herring are constantly farting. Okay? It's a discovery that was made in 2005 by a team of scientists from Scotland and Canada. They suspect that this farting is a means of communication. I don't know, what are the herrings saying with their farts? You still a herring? Me too.
They're saying things like, God, the turbulence was terrible on that plane.
The third truth, early Antarctic explorers categorised penguins as fish. 15th century Portuguese sailors, such as Bartolomeu Dias, classified the African penguins he encountered at the Cape of Good Hope as fish because they swam like fish and couldn't fly, allowing them to be eaten during Lent. So it could have been Filito Penguin. And that means, Zoe, you've scored 3 points. Herring breed so voraciously during their mating season that some shorelines of Alaska become coated in a thick scum of sperm. Much like Magaluf after A-levels. It's now the turn of Tony Hawks. Tony says he still gets 2 or 3 messages a week that are intended for the skateboarding superstar, Tony Hawk. It's annoying for Tony, but still better than the alternative, no human contact at all. Your subject, Tony, is sausages. Sausages. Savoury food made from meat that's typically minced or ground, flavoured with seasonings and encased in a thin skin. Off you go, Tony.
In 2020, during COVID, Iceland supermarkets completely ran out of sausages, something which hadn't happened since 1975 when schoolgirl pin-ups, the Bay City Rollers, featured in an advert for Wall's sausages. In Belarus, they tried to mitigate it being such a shit place to live in by being unreasonably proud of the Belarusian sausage. In 2014, the president guaranteed the quality of his sausage's product when he officially stated that the Belarusian sausage does not contain toilet paper.
Zoe.
I think there's definitely mention of bog roll in a Belarusian banger.
You're absolutely right. In 2014, President Lukashenko of Belarus, while attempting to stress the quality of his country's products in comparison to inferior Russian goods following the collapse of the Soviet Union, told reporters that Belarusian sausage does not contain toilet paper, unlike the Russian sausage. Not sure he'd say that now.
The late Queen was known to Prince Philip as sausage. The world's longest sausage was over 38 miles long, and the world's widest sausage was 1 foot wide. David Beckham was known to call Victoria his little sausage. In 2022, Brooklyn Beckham released his own range of breakfast sausages with a photo of Brooklyn on the front of the pack and underneath the words, prick with a fork.
Sorry.
Maybe he did bring out his own brand of sausage.
He didn't. Oh. No, he often posts about cooking breakfast, not sausages yet.
Singer-songwriter Elvis Costello comes from a line of Italian butchers and in his early teens worked in his father's butcher shop when they invented a pork and green olive salami. After 2 weeks of indifferent sales, a young Elvis proclaimed, "Olive salami is here to stay." Before Greg's first started, it was going to be called the Home of the Sausage. In 2017, Greg's issued an apology after replacing the baby Jesus with a sausage roll in a nativity scene with the excuse that sausage said backwards sounds exactly like Jesus.
Mark.
That did happen, didn't it? The nativity thing with a sausage instead of a baby Jesus.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Yes, it... In 2017, Greg's the Bakers were forced to apologise for a nativity scene advert depicting the three wise men gathered round a manger containing a sausage roll instead of the baby Jesus. Comedian Bob Mortimer tweeted, Come on, KFC, show Greg's the way, put a miniature Jesus in all your Christmas buckets. Yes, you're absolutely right. And that's the end of Tony's lecture. And at the end of that round, Tony, you've managed to smuggle three truths past the rest of the panel, which are that in 1975, Iceland supermarkets completely ran out of sausages. And this is the supermarkets in Iceland, not the Iceland chain of supermarkets, so where you're big. But this is in 1975. Supermarkets in Iceland completely ran out of sausages. After 90% of Iceland's women participated in a nationwide strike they called Women's Day Off. Female workers, housewives and mothers refused to do any paid jobs or domestic labour in protest against gender inequality and the pay gap with men. The result was that men struggled with basic tasks, particularly cooking, and so emptied the supermarket shelves of easy-to-cook food such as sausages. The strike was a turning point for gender equality in Iceland, leading to the passage of the Gender Equality Act in 1976 and the election of the world's first female president in 1980. So that went well. The second truth is that the world's longest sausage was over 38 miles long. In 2014, Romania earned a place in the Guinness Book of World Records by creating the world's longest sausage. And the third truth is that Queen Elizabeth II was known to Prince Philip as sausage. And that means, Tony, you've scored 3 points. Germany has a museum devoted entirely to curried sausages, which is, quite literally, the worst museum in Berlin. If a German speaker doesn't give a damn about something, rather than say, this means nothing to me, they'll say, this is a sausage to me. And if they're Austrian, they'll add, oh, Vienna. Which brings us to the final scores. In fourth place, with minus 3 points, we have Mark Steele. In third place, with no points, it's Tony Hawkes. In second place, with 1 point, it's Zoe Lyons. And in first place with an unassailable 3 points, it's this week's winner, Fern Brady. That's about it for this week. Goodbye.
The Unbelievable Truth was devised by John Naismith and Graham Garden and featured David Mitchell in the chair with panellists Tony Hawkes, Zoe Lyons, Mark Steele and Fern Brady. The chairman's script was written by Dan Gaster and Colin Swash and the producer was John Naismith. It was a random production for BBC Radio 4.
Well, tomorrow evening in one person...